Well, we're fighting all kinds of wars. We're in Afghanistan. We have a war on terror, but potentially we may face a much deadlier battle. We're now joined by the authors of the new book, Deadliest Enemy, Our War Against Killer Germs, Dr. Michael Osterholm and Mark Olshaker with us. Thank you both for joining us on WILS.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
thank you.
Now, I'm curious, when we talk about this being the deadliest enemy, how concerned are you both right now for a potential pandemic anytime soon?
Well, this is Mark, and we're both very concerned. Here's the thing. Our goal with this book is to try to keep the unthinkable from becoming the inevitable. We put many billions of dollars a year into national security, yet we're losing sight of the greatest national security threat of all, which is infectious disease, both naturally occurring and bioterror. And Mike has been working on this for many, many decades, and he convinced me, and that's why we wrote this book together.
Okay, so Dr. Osterholm, how vulnerable are we right now to a pandemic actually occurring, would you say?
Well, first of all, pandemics have been a part of our history dating back to antiquity. This is when an influenza virus in particular basically comes from the gut of a bird, changes genetically sufficiently so that it can infect a human, and with even further changes, a human can transmit it to other humans. Mm-hmm. When that happens, quickly the virus will flare up in whatever country it starts in, and it'll spread around the world now with modern transportation in hours to days.
Okay. But the last pandemic, was that in 1918, that influenza pandemic?
No, actually that was the last really serious pandemic. Other ones had occurred in 57, 68, and then we had one in 2009 that was a milder strain.
Okay.
But it's just a matter of time before we have one that will be more like 1918, which have happened in the past. And the one in 1918 didn't just kill people because of the fact that we didn't have modern medical care, antibiotics. This actually was the virus directly killing these people, which today we couldn't handle much better than we could back in 1918, even with our modern medical care.
Well, why do you say it's just a matter of time? Well, what's going to trigger it then?
Well, this is the part that is the unknown. We know that pandemics occur anywhere from every 10 to 50 years, and that they have been like clockwork in that regard, dating back to, you know, the earliest recorded history. The challenge we have today is because we have so many more birds in the world for the purposes of protein for food sources. Take, for example, just one city, Shanghai, China, mm-hmm. where over 100 million chickens are grown every month in the peri-urban region of Shanghai just to feed Shanghai. The time from a chicken being hatched till that chicken breast is on your plate is about 35 days. That is like an incredible, incredible machine for making flu viruses if they get into these birds. And we've seen this happen now more often than in the last 2 years than we have in the previous 20 years.
Okay.
Just so one of the scenarios in the book is, in fact, about a particular flu virus starting in China. We wrote that 9 months ago. In the last 6 weeks, it's almost been a word for word what we have in the book.
Michael, listen to it in this context.
Yeah.
We as human beings reproduce about once a generation, every 25 to 30 years. Viruses and bacteria reproduce about every 20 minutes, and each one of those reproduction cycles is another spin of the genetic roulette wheel.
Tell me this, Mark, though. How would it actually spread? Let's say it starts in China. How did it end up getting here and turn into a massive pandemic here?
Well, let me take the 2009 example as one. When we first recognized that this area in Mexico, not far from Mexico City, was actually experiencing these sudden increase in severe life-threatening illnesses, mm-hmm. and we realized it was an influenza virus that was new, there was a major discussion about we got to shut the border at Mexico right now so we keep it out. And then we'd had a few cases show up in the San Diego region, and some of us argued, hey, it's way too late. It's beyond that. Well, in retrospect, we went back afterwards and we determined that by the time we even came to that early determination, it was already occurring in people in 40 different countries. Hmm. So today, with the mass transit of people and goods around the world, any virus that starts like that, that can be transmitted by the respiratory route, just breathing and sharing air, it's going to move quickly around the world.
Is there any advantage?
Not even a question of how fast it will move. It's just how quickly we'll pick it up.
So once that starts happening, is there any advantage in being healthy or having a healthy lifestyle, or is that just not going to even matter?
Well, you know, that's one of the challenges. And in fact, with some of the strains of flu, we see the worst outcomes occur in some of the healthiest people. In 1918, the number one age group to die from the 1918 flu was actually those who were 20 to 29 years of age and otherwise previously healthy. Mm-hmm. And part of that has to do with the immune system. The more vigorous the response to the immune system, the more it triggered this kind of immune-related disease. Mm-hmm. And so that it's not always obvious in what you think of most flu cases dying, you think of older people. And actually with new flu pandemic strains, it's the younger people. And this is exactly why in Deadliest Enemy we lay out why we have to have new flu vaccines. Absolutely critical. Mm-hmm. And we don't have them.
It's Dr. Michael Osterholm and Mark Olshaker here with us, 1320 WILS. The brand new book is Deadliest Enemy, Our War Against Killer Germs. So what are we doing wrong with the vaccines right now?
Well, we really haven't had a commitment to do anything. I mean, we're still using a 1940s vaccine that basically came out of World War II work. And right there, actually, a lot of the very key work right at the University of Michigan. And that was a great vaccine at the time for what the technology brought us. But today, we need new and better flu vaccines. And we, last year, on a worldwide basis, invested about over $1 billion in HIV vaccine research, which was important, necessary. I wouldn't cut a penny of it. But we only invested about $35 million in new flu vaccine research. And we just have not prioritized it for so long. We told the public the current flu vaccines work really well. Well, they work marginally to sometimes moderately well.
Okay.
And to make them takes months to do so. So if a pandemic suddenly hits, it's not like we can just suddenly overnight have a vaccine. Yet we have research today that shows that we may be able to make vaccines that could protect against a number of strains of flu virus, and that actually could be given well in advance, years in advance, to not only protect against seasonal flu, but should a pandemic strain emerge.
Wait, you're saying it would be we'd administer them years before a potential pandemic, and it would still be in our system?
Exactly. In other words, what we have to capture are those parts of the flu virus that don't change, so that if we can make ourselves immune to that, that may protect against a wide range of the flu viruses out there. And we have enough data now to support that. So just to put this in context, back in 1984, I got in a lot of trouble with my colleagues because I was a real naysayer when the then Secretary of Health and Human Services came out and said, you know what, we're going to have an HIV vaccine in 3 years. And I said, no way, we won't have an effective one likely in my lifetime. And that was just based on what I knew very well about the kind of virus that the HIV virus was. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sitting here today with that same skepticism to vaccines, saying I do believe that we could have what we call a game-changing flu vaccine, one that could protect against many strains, could protect for long periods of time. We just need to do the research and get that out to make that be the case.
And if we could do that, that would be a tremendous gift to mankind. It would be like when we were able to eliminate smallpox from the face of the earth. This could save more lives than have been saved in all the emergency rooms in all the world in the last 50 years.
And Mark, tell me, in working on the book with Dr. Osterholm, how's it affected your own views and your own concerns about this potential outbreak?
Well, I think it certainly alerted me to the fact that this is our greatest war. If we suddenly had an alien invasion, all the countries of the world, I think, all the religions, all the nationalities, all of the different political points of view would come together to fight this. Well, we do have an alien invasion, and it's microbes. And what's fascinating to me, and one of the reasons I've been interested in Mike's work all these years, I do a lot of work. I've written a number of books with John Douglas, the FBI's behavioral profiling pioneer, and they've been great mystery stories. This is a great mystery story. Mike is one of the great medical detectives of our age, and aside from the warning that I think we give in this book, this is a great story of high medical and technological drama that is ongoing even as we speak.
Okay, so here's what I'm trying to understand. Dr. Osterholm, are you saying right now we are completely unprepared for some kind of mutation and in the influenza virus that could take us all out? Is that what's happening right now?
We're largely unprepared. And would I say would take us all out? No, I think that's an important distinction. But, you know, in 1918, we had over 100 million people who died at a time when the world's population was one-third of what it is today. At the same time, we didn't have a world that was dependent on the kinds of supply chains and products that we have. Let me just give you
and no airplane travel either.
Let me give you an example. We did a study several years ago where we surveyed a world-renowned group of PharmDs, pharmacists with doctors, and we said, what are those life-saving drugs you have to have every day in the United States or people die? Not cancer drugs, not lifestyle drugs, et cetera, but what's on the crash cart in the emergency room? Mm-hmm. What are those drugs that are absolutely necessary right now or people die? And we came up with 30 different drug categories, of which 100% of those drugs were generic. No big company supported them. 100% were made outside of the United States, most of them in India and China. And there was no stockpiles of them anywhere in the country.
Okay.
Anything that would interrupt the manufacturing process in India or China, or any way the shipment of those drugs via fast freighter, and we would have tremendous number of deaths in the United States, collateral damage deaths that would occur overnight.
And it wouldn't matter how good our hospitals were.
And so we haven't factored that kind of thing in, the collateral damage issue. So in a pandemic of influenza where we couldn't move things like this, I would say right now that people just really haven't fully understood the impact that one of these could have in a modern world.
How long would it run its course before life would get back to normal if it were to happen?
It could take several years. In the past, that's what it's done. The first wave occurs, and then it comes down five months later, another big wave occurs, and in some cases, even the third wave.
So with the initial wave, though, could a vaccine be put together to stop, at least to confront the coming waves?
Well, what we try to do today with today's technology is get vaccines, but again, they may not be that effective. Mm-hmm. The vaccine in 2009, which was against a strain that wasn't that severe, actually the vaccine in this country was about 50% effective, which is good at the time, but if you look at the age-related issues, it wasn't that effective. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, depending on what age we were in. So what we're saying is that we can do something, but it'll be limited. And for the world, we will not have vaccine for most of the world.
I got one last question.
Because
in your book, you have a chapter called Mosquitoes, Public Enemy Number One. How much of a role could they play in such a pandemic?
Well, they're not going to be part of an influenza pandemic, but look what's happened with Zika. Look what's happened right now with yellow fever. We're sitting on a powder keg in Brazil with yellow fever. This is a virus infection that's transmitted by the same mosquito that's transmitting Zika. If this gets into the urban areas of Brazil, all bets are off. There could be thousands and thousands of deaths. Okay. This is an infection that once you become infected, you get sick. Some people recover, but up to a third of the people go on and have life-threatening illness after that.
You can't really kill the mosquitoes.
This could be serious.
Yeah, you can't get rid of the mosquitoes, can you?
Well, that's the point. We need to do something, but right now the Aedes aegypti mosquito, the one that causes these Zika, dengue, yellow fever outbreaks, are at an all-time high in the Western Hemisphere in terms of breeding sites. Plastic garbage is the number one breeding site. Look at the developing world. It's loaded with plastic garbage today, something that didn't exist 40 years ago.
Okay. Do you take any precautions? Do the two of you do anything to protect yourselves from germs and so on?
Well, you know, I do. I get my vaccinations. When I travel, I'm very careful about what kind of food I eat in terms of cooked food, et cetera. And I, like everybody else, have to play the roulette game. You know, I'm breathing air all the time that other people have just breathed. Mm-hmm. And I can only hope to hell that whatever I'm breathing in didn't have one of those viruses that I don't want to catch.
Yeah. Doctor,
so that shows we're all in it together. There's no question about it.
We're all tied in, no question. Dr. Michael Osterholm and Mark Olshaker, the authors of the brand new book, Deadliest Enemy, Our War Against Killer Germs. The book, again, is Deadliest Enemy. Dr. Michael Osterholm and Mark Olshaker, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Michael. You've been a terrific host.
Thank you.